Gaze into the candle, she said. You're going to concentrate on the flame. Once you're completely re-soft-laxed, you'll see little reflections of light corning at you from several directions. In one of them, you'll see this bright thread light, coming directly toward your eyes. You can't miss it, it's the brightest and thinnest ray. That's the silver cord. I was a bit nervous and couldn't concentrate very well at first. I began looking at the candle flame, squinting my eyes, opening and closing them, experimenting with the distortions this caused in the light. I saw reflections going in all directions, four main stems going up, down and to the sides. I kept doing it until suddenly I saw it. A bright thread. Excited, I kept looking at it until I was sure. Yes, I think I have it, I said. Keep doing it. Open your eyes, squint, open them again, and keep practicing until you can find this thread any time you choose. Pay no attention to me, pretend I'm not here. Keep doing it, I'll tell you what the next step is. I practiced for nearly an hour before I got the hang of it, and was able to see the thread any time I wanted to. When Rama saw how confident I was that I'd found the thread, she told me that next I was to learn to use my imagination, as the ability to create mental imagery was a vital aspect of astral travel. Now that you've found the thread, Rama said, you must follow it to the end of the light projection point, your candle, in this case. Follow this thread the way a spider follows its web. The energy of your eyes is going to travel along this silver cord until you're inside the wick of the candle. Once there, you'll see a lot of light. You'll see fire around you, as if you were standing on the wick. Except you won't have a physical body. Only your spirit will be there, your energy, your soul. Now practice that, then I'll tell you the next step. You want me to follow the thread to the wick of the candle? Try to imagine I'm really there, sitting at the center of the flame. That's it. That's exactly what you should do. You will be completely aware of sitting in the candle. You're going to see the light glowing around you, you're going to see through the fire, you're going to try to see me, see yourself, and this room will be the universe, the cosmos. Maybe you'll even see the reflection of your eyes as two distant stars. You'll see my eyes as two stars, because you're there, inside that candle, far away in proportion to what surrounds you. Okay, let me practice it, then I'll let you know. You must pretend I'm not here. Good luck. It was a little difficult for me to follow this thread to the end of the line. Somehow my nervousness, my distrust, my skepticism were in the way. Rama, sensing my feelings, came up behind me and put her arms around me. Relax, she said softly, keep concentrating on the light. You'll see what happens. I began imagining I was driving a car and that the road was the silver cord. Gradually, as Rama sat behind me, holding me between her legs in the water, I began to feel more at ease. Then it happened. I could no longer feel my body. My whole concentration and energy were inside the flame. It was as if an irresistible magnetic force pulled some soft hyphen thing out of me. The only awareness I had was of my spirit traveling along a smooth, completely illuminated road, suspended in total darkness. I had no sense of direction, north or south, up or down. The next thing I knew, I was sitting on top of the candle's wick, which seemed like a giant cable. I had become a part of the flame's energy. It seemed as if my awareness had reached the smallest point in the universe, yet I was awake, alert, and had absolute clarity of perception. I looked up and saw the flame tapering to a point, as it moved slowly away in huge, undulating particles. Looked out and saw nothing. It was dark, black, like staring into the night. Far away, at a great distance, I could see two tiny specks of light. I knew I was seeing my own eyes looking into the flame, reflecting the light of the candle. Couldn't see Rama nor her eyes. I saw only a large mass of something. Then I was awake, shouting to Rama, I did it. I was on the wick of that candle, I saw the fire around me, I saw the fire going up and the reflection of my pupils in the far distance, just as you said. But I couldn't see you, except for a big mass of something, like a conglomeration of tiny lights flickering in the darkness. That was the reflection of the water dripping from my hair, she said. Do you want to try it again? Ha ha. Do you really think I could? Sure, it'll be easier the second time. Try it. I tried it again, and again. 4 times to be exact. In the process, one candle burned down and I had to get out of the water to light another one. Once I had mastered traveling to the wick of the candle, which was becoming easier with each voyage, I began to notice certain things. I didn't seem to have any sensation other than sight. I was able to see things at a distance and all around me. I could see the wax of the candle, like white mountains melting in slow motion. When I got out of the water to light another candle, a pen fell out of my robe pocket. Rama said, "Can you transport your energy to the very tip of the pen as you did to the wick of the candle? Do the same thing, find you silver cord on the tip of that pen where the light is reflecting off the metal. You think you can do that? I'll give it a try." I successfully projected to the metal ring on the tip of the pen, which now looked like a huge telephone pole, about 10,000 times its normal size. I wasn't able to see the other, rubber-tipped end of the pen. I saw a long, yellow line that eventually disappeared into the uni-soft hyphen verse. I could see the candle, source of great light, way above, at a distance. I could see Rama's and my eyes reflecting the candle light, like 4 big, bright stars shining in the endless black of an infinite night. I had no sensation of my physical body, only a consciousness of being on the tip of that pen. When I decided to get back to my body, I used the same process, pinpointing the source of light in my physical body as communicating with the light in the object I was inhabiting. The thread of light was the bridge between these two destination points. When I was back in my body, I said to Rama, "I did it again." I tried to explain to her the things I had seen during my astral outing. "That's what you're supposed to be seeing. You started traveling in a distance that's safe for you. It's best that you go only a limited distance right now. You traveled maybe 5 feet between here and the candle, maybe 5.5 feet between here and the pen. Little by little you're going to expand, and each time you will go a little further. Your perception expands and contracts in the cosmos. There's a lot of cosmos between your eyes and that stone over there. Why don't you try aiming for that?" This time I found a reflection on top of the stone, which was wet and reflecting light. I concentrated on the sharpest point of light, squinted my eyes, found the cord, but somehow it seemed broken. There wasn't a straight line between my eyes and the light's most intense reflection point. I told Rama I couldn't establish the line, that there was an interval in the thread, a disconnection. "When something like that happens," she said, "go to the very end of your silver cord. When it stops, continue traveling in the same direction. The silver cord makes itself invisible at times, but that doesn't mean it's not there. It's there. Sometimes you'll find the other half, sometimes you'll just continue moving into the cosmos." I practiced for a while, until I was able to project my thinking element to the wick of the candle, the tip of the pen, the rock, and to several other light-reflecting objects in the bathhouse. Because I was still unsure of myself, Rama asked me to go no further than the objects which were close by. I felt great. The experience had been different and exciting, like discovering a new toy. Yet it seemed as if, for the first time in my life, I'd found something meaningful, something that brought me a sense of peace. My main problem had been sustaining my concentra soft hyphen shin. Rama emphasized the importance of my practicing at least a week before we could begin traveling into the cosmos together. She said I should do it alone, when I was relaxed. "Eventually, you'll be able to do it at will, like any other normal bodily function," she said. We got dressed and went to the hotel restaurant where we had something hot to warm us up. I had many questions about what had happened and why Rama had chosen to guide me through this experience. "Rama, I would like you to tell me what you want from me. What do I have to do? What people do I have to see or contact? What do you mean by research? What kind of proof will my readers be given to support what I write, so this story is believable?" "Chako, the purpose of this is not meant to be proving the existence of flying saucers. Our kingdom is not of this world. We don't want to interfere with anyone's beliefs or activities. What do I want from you? 2 full years of your life. 2 full years. Are you crazy?" Who's going to finance me? How will I live? Who's going to pay for these 2 years? You will.
I will?
You're asking me to write something that may lead to my being ridiculed and humiliated, and on top of that, you're telling me I should pay for it myself. Is this like an investment or something?
Not actually an investment.
But as you go along, you'll keep a diary of your experiences while you're here with me, then research them, and when the time comes, almost 2 years from now, you should have the book ready. You make it sound so easy.
Where do I start?
Start with the circumstances and events that led to your being here. What about my personal life?
What about your personal life?
You know how it is out there, when people in power wants to discredit someone, like in politics, they drag the skeletons out of the closet. They dig into your most intimate affairs, and before you know it, you're finished.
What do you have to be afraid of?
I had to stop for a moment and examine my conscience to find if there was something I had to be afraid of. I had never been convicted of any crimes, nor was involved with thieves, murderers, nor anyone associated with illegal activities. Before I had a chance to think any further, Rama interrupted.
See, there's nothing in your past life that can be brought up against you.
What about the pending court case in California on July 15th? If I am held in contempt for not appearing for my assigned court date, or worse if justice doesn't prevail over legality, I can understand how you feel, but as far as writing this message, I really don't care whose name goes on it. You can write it anonymously if you like. Remember, we're concerned only with getting the message to livesoft-irad. How you present it, how you write it, it's your decision. You don't have to do it right this minute. We have 2 years. That is, if you have the strength.
Why do you say that?
Because I have the feeling at times that you'll want to let the whole thing drop. It's going to take great strength and courage to accomplish what you must do.
So, why me then?
Why not you, Chaco?
I know you can do it.
You have both strength and discipline. If there's anyone in this world who can get the job done, it's you. By the time you start writing, you'll have the wisdom, the Nullsoft-edge, the faith. You'll be complete.
Will this be a full-time job for me?
No, you'll continue living your life. I'm not going to interfere with your activities in this world. But if I can give you a hand, you know I'll be happy to do so. I want you to be successful. When you understand the message yourself, then you'll make it. In Ezekiel, you can find a similar situation. The Euphonauts gave Ezekiel a book to eat. After eating it, they told him, "Okay, now fill your bowels with it, then go and speak to your people." They came here with a message. They chose this man, Ezekiel, to deliver it. He had his personal problems, too. But he was a good, sincere man.
The same reasons why we've chosen you.
Because you're sincere with yourself, and we know you're the kind of person who will always act in good faith both in business and in your personal life.
I laughed. Yes, I act in good faith, but I also have to pay rent and bills.
For the past year and a half, you've been financing yourself because you knew that you could deliver for your Park and Madison Avenue corporations, right?
Right.
Supposed it doesn't work?
Suppose you blow it?
I'll be flat broke. I'll lose everything I have.
Look, Chaco, wherever you go, you're well liked. Because you're a pleasant, enjoyable sort of individual, and you're a good businessman.
You're industrious. Many times you've taken assignments for a movie studio that have taken you to nations all over the world. You've worked strictly freelance, never committed to one studio, to one company, always working with them, not for them. You're an excellent coordinator and a good contact man. That's really your job, isn't it?
Yes, yes, this is true.
So, mister, we're hiring you for 2 years because you're the kind of person we like to use to get our message to certain people on your planet. We'll sign no contracts because suing is unknown to you and me. This is a preparation period for you, a preparation for something beautiful that is coming to only a handful of people in this horrible world of yours. If you have a good reason for not taking this assignment, for not being a partner in this venture, let us know. But I think you can, and will, do it. We're going to give you all the help and encouragement you'll need to accomplish the task. In the meantime,
We'll have a good time while we are here. As for your July 15th court appearance in Beverly Hills, you're just going to have to trust me when I tell you it's not going to happen. Please believe me, I'm a serious person with a mission to accomplish. We must have mutual respect and trust. If you still think I'm here to play games, I'm going to ask you once more to trust someone, to have faith. We're trying to gather people who have good faith, to guide them, and to get them to follow the teachings of a man who called himself the Son of God. Someone who understood God as the Force, a man who realized his cosmic duty on your planet. He will return to us soon. I ask you to read Daniel, the whole book of Revelations and the 24th chapter of Matthew so we'll have some common ground to understand each other. Okay, I'll remember that, but as for the 2 years, I can just continue my present lifestyle? Yes, because I have the feeling you won't be coming here next weekend. You'll be traveling around Peru on business. Your supervisor will be here. I still can't believe that. If it happens, will you have more faith in me? How do I know you're not an agent from some big company that has planned this whole thing? Come on, Chaco, what organization would be teaching you how to cultivate your spirit or show you how to control your soul after your body dies? Your spirit lives forever. If you don't die in a few years, you'll be one of the 144,000 who will be taken alive. Taken where? To another place. This I can't tell you as yet. As we go along, we're going to give you all the answers you want. Again, this is not meant to be any kind of proof. I'm not trying to prove anything. The only thing I'm trying to do is make the task easier for both of us. Your education will mainly concern the events that will be occurring between 1976 and the time when we take those 144,000 people somewhere. Could you give me some idea where? Call it paradise. Shangri-La. Utopia. Let's leave it at that. It's nothing to fear. I've never believed in the existence of such places. Your supervisor will be here on the 18th or their soft hyphenopts. Towards the end of this month, there's going to be some kind of political trouble in Lima. You'll have to be there to see what's happening, to report on it. It will be August before we'll see each other again. Take this time to practice the lessons you've already learned. It's going to be very easy for you to astral travel. Read the material I've assigned, the books of Daniel and Revelations and the 24th chapter of Matthew. Your Latin American supervisor will be leaving sometime around August 7th. As soon as you get the chance, come back here, so we can have a nice juicy chat. Look, there's no way my Latin American supervisor will be coming to this country at this time of year, I said, unconvinced. But who knows what will happen. As far as the political situation is concerned, the relationship between the United States and Peru hasn't been the greatest lately. If what you're telling me comes true, yes, that will give me a lot more faith in you. Good. We left the restaurant and went to my room. Rama mentioned that she would be happy to help me take care of the details on how I could finance the writing project. I was overjoyed she had the ability to read minds. It made communication much simpler. It amazed me that she had somehow known about my activities for the past 5 years, that I'd been freelancing for large movie corporations in various parts of the world, and about the kinds of problems I was having in my personal and business life. We had never discussed one aspect of my work in Peru, however. Now that she'd asked me to let her know if I had a good reason for not being part of the assignment she was offering, I felt it was time to discuss this situation with her. It was one of the reasons I was so reluctant to get involved with her mission. I'd come close to bringing it up when we had our discussion about one organization ruling the world. My business in Peru at this time had two aspects. One was to promote movies for a motion picture company, but I was also there on another assignment, to gather journalistic information from the South American press wires and from my connections in Peru, reporting my findings to one man. On October 3, 1968, General Juan Velasco Alvarado took command of the presidency of Peru as a military junta. Since that time, the relations between this CONSOFT-TRI and the United States had been going downhill, both diplomatically and in business matters. I'd been doing public relations work for some large New York corporations since 1970, using my connections to help solve some of the conflicts, in order to preserve their investments in Peru. When I met Rama, I already knew of the existence of this centralized corporation, which has subsidiaries all over the world. I was working for that corporation. One letter of the alphabet, one, representing International, symbolized this company. I knew the name of only one man within that organization, a man who was world-renowned. I knew he was with a top-secret consolidation, which had been headquartered in Lima, Peru, for years. This was the man I reported to. He sent me all over the world on some very heavy assignments. He trusted me, knowing I would act in good faith. When I began accepting assignments from him, it was difficult for me to believe that people and organizations like the Mission Impossible team really existed. But, as time went on, I realized they did exist. I began to see how the manipulation of both business and government is in the hands of this international conglomerate, headed by one giant corporation, and that its power was in the hands of one man. This man, the head of an international firm, had connections in key government jobs in many countries. I was the liaison between this international setup and foreign governments because of my diverse cultural upbringing, and my fluency in languages, which enabled me to comfortably function in many parts of the world. After we were settled in my room, I told Rama about the man I worked for. I explained that my work for this man and the international firm he represented was one of the reasons I had been reluctant to get involved with her project. I would have to answer questions from too many people, businesses, and governments. Matter-of-factly, Rama said, the man you work for will be assassinated by the end of 1975. Her response was unexpected and shocking. I stared at her, speechless. If there was one man I trusted in this world, he was the man. To hear Rama say he would be dead in a year and a half was hard to take. Even though I'd come to respect her psychic abilities, it was unbelievable, and painful to think she could be right. It bothered me that she would say something like that. Without further discussion of the subject, we both went to bed and fell asleep almost immediately. I woke up at 5 in the morning and turned over. Rama was gone. Since I was wide awake, I decided to get up, pack, and get an early start driving back to Lima. I began thinking about what Rama had said the night before. When I'd left the office last Friday, there had been certain indications that trouble might be starting, but not quite as serious as Rama seemed to think. And certainly not serious enough to extend my stay in Peru. I couldn't wait to get back to the office to see what had developed. I was indeed curious. Chapter 10. The Education of a Believer. It had been over a month before I could go back into the Andes Mountains to see Rama again. Just as she had predicted, the day I arrived back in Lima, I was asked by my people in the United States to make arrangements for my supervisor to fly to Lima, Peru. I had been astounded by the accuracy of her prediction. This, of course, blew my July 15th quarter PS. I did what I could to work out another court date, because when I failed to appear, I knew a warrant for my arrest would automatically be issued and I would be arrested as soon as I set foot in California. On July 18th, my supervisor arrived in Lima to straighten out the mess created by some of our Peruvian investors. To complicate matters even further, on July 27th, the Peruvian government took over the news media, slapping tight censorship control over all telesoft-vision, newspaper and magazine reporting of the news events. Even worse, a curfew was put into effect and the military police began to stop and question foreigners. Finally, on August 7th, my supervisor returned to the United States. He requested that I stay in Peru for at least another 2 months to ensure our business in Tersoft-Ests in Peru went as planned. My biggest problem was with our Peruvian investors, a bunch of hardheads who could turn the smallest assignment into a complicated mess. Everyone was haggling over the casting and credits for the movie. The whole situation was extremely difficult and depressing. During this time, I managed to find some time to do a great deal of reading, and practiced my astral projection. I asked my people in the United States to send me several books and other related material on astral travel and UFOs. They sent me Raymond Drake's Gods and Spacemen in the Ancient West. After reading this book, just as Rama had said, I no longer believed it was impossible that she could be from another world. The book gave so much detailed information corresponding to my experiences with Rama that I couldn't wait to get back to the Andes Mountains and talk to her again. I had a lot of questions and I wanted answers. On Friday, August 9th, at about 5:30 in the afternoon, I got into my rented car and drove back to Akaya. I felt very tired and somewhat depressed, so I went straight to bed. The next morning, I had breakfast and, since it was Saturday, I had to wait in line for my turn to get into the baths. To my surprise, Rama was already there, waiting for me. How did you know I was there? I asked, even though I already knew the answer. Well, I always do. I sense you're coming. Remember, I'm very close to your thoughts. I know your intentions. Since yesterday afternoon you've been thinking about coming here. And you were brooding over your luck in Peru. How did you know all this was going to happen? You knew I was going to have to stay in Peru, that my supervisor was coming to Lima, that we were going to have this mess. How did you know about the political situation? You accurately forecasted the future. It's difficult for me to believe you did it. You keep forgetting what I'm telling you about the third force. I not only sensed your feelings, your reasons for coming here, and when you would be here, I was also able to sense the intentions and thinking of the people around you. How could you sense the intentions of our Peruvian investors? How did you know they were a bunch of schmucks? That's easy. First of all, you already knew they weren't keeping their word, isn't that correct? Yes. But how did you know my supervisor was coming? I had no idea about that. The same way. By the connection with what you did know. When you left the United States, you were told that should there be any complications, not to hesitate to call them and let them know exactly what was happened soft-hyphening. That way, your supervisor would come if you needed him. When you sent your reports, I knew they would consider it necessary to send someone to help you. And they did. Yes, but I keep asking myself, how did you know these things? I guess this is the proof I've been looking for, that you are what you claim to be. Look, Chaco. It was no different than the gypsy woman reading your palm for $3.50 at the Santa Monica Pier. Since your predictions were true, I must believe that everything else you tell me is true. The gypsy lady didn't tell me she was from another planet. And she was only 85% accurate. So far, your predictions have been true in every case. Your reading of my past has been just as true and faithful, not only to the facts of my life, but also in terms of your interpretation of the whole series of events that have led me to this point of time in my life. Rama, I'm beginning to realize, perhaps for the first time, just what an extraordinary person you are. I believe you, and I love you, despite our interplanetary differences. I want to know more about you. Where you come from. How long you've been here. Everything. I want to know everything about you. And about the world you come from. Okay, Chaco. First I want you to realize that what is natural in this universe is often the most wondrous surprise. You think of my being from another planet as something unsoft-natural, an impossible phenomenon. But I come from a world in this very solar system. It's not very far from here, considering that space travel extends beyond the conglomeration of galaxies comprising the cosmic unit of which we both are a part. I am here in this world because I have a serious mission. I am a messenger. While I'm here, I look like you, and dress like you. We're from another part of the universe. We've been traveling through these vast dimensions since the beginning of recorded history. The Bible is an ancient record of visitations to Earth by extraterrestrials. These visits have been misrepresented due to the limited understanding of the people who received the messages given by earlier astronauts. Visits from outer space to your Earth during the last few centuries can compare with an ocean liner that travels to a faraway island once or twice a year to trade with the natives. The same type of thing is happening today, spacemen and women are scattered all over your world.